Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining in. And as usual, we have a full show full of interesting stories, so I hope you stick with us for the next hour. Exploring the community. Dennis Hart is coming up in a few minutes with a summary of local news from the Ames Daily Tribune. But before that, I want to just spend a minute on my favorite topic, which is the wild ones. And okay, so this week, Easter Sunday, it was really pretty day, if you remember. And I went to the YMCA woods, which many of us still call the Reactor Woods, northwest of town. And I was actually walking there because I wanted to see the fleeting flowers of spring. And I do believe after yesterday's rain, I would guess that the bluebells are blooming now. I checked them earlier this week and they were still all pink and closed up. But I think after rain and then sun, safe to say the bluebells are out now, which is very cool. But anyway, I was walking in the woods and I saw a bird fly in a tree in front of me, and he kind of had a red head, and I was like, oh, wow, a red-headed woodpecker, you know, because you don't see them that much. You see the red-bellied woodpeckers, but the red-headed woodpeckers are a little bit rarer, and so I thought, oh, that's really cool. And then the bird showed himself to me. He came around to the side of the tree where I was, and then he took off, and he flew right in front of me, and it was a pileated woodpecker. And I don't know if you, like, you know, Cynthia's eyes are popping open, but Cynthia, our engineer here. But the pileated, that's Woody Woodpecker. That's a big, big bird. And it's the Woody Woodpecker with the red hat, you know, with the tuft on is with what do you call that? It's like a crown, yeah, on his head. Enormous animal and very rare still in this area. So I was very excited, felt like a gift to be able to see that bird. And then he landed on a tree and he hammered on it. And it was like, it wasn't just like a tap, tap, tap like a woodpecker. It was like a boom. It was like a jackhammer. It was boom, 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 boom. The tree sounded really deep and hollow. And it just felt like a salute. You know, it felt like an Easter salute. It was just really lovely. Now, I talked about later with Pat Schlarbaum, our environmental reporter, and he said that hammering is actually a mating call. The type of hammering, the number of hammers or whatever are seductive elements, so to speak.
Like rubbing your engine in a car.
Yeah. So that's very awesome. And so I think I've motivated Pat to do a pileated woodpecker phonology to talk about the hammering of the woodpecker. But that was just a real thrill, seeing that huge bird flying in front of me and knowing that it's very rare. And I've actually heard Lana Nachtigall on on her show on Tuesdays at noon, the Donna Lana Kitchen. She actually has mentioned that she has a pileated woodpecker in her backyard, in her forest by her farm, and that would be the same bird because this is the same forest. So anyway, that's my news from the wild ones. Other than that, just a brief note, I have friends from Switzerland here and they're staying in our basement. And the basement has like a little window where you can look out. You kind of see just the ground in the middle of the basement window. And they were very excited because yesterday they woke up and they saw legs walking by. And they're not used to the deer situation that we have in Ames. So they were just really amazed to see all these deer legs walking by the window. It's kind of a thrill for them. So anyway, that's my report from the wild ones. Here is Mr. Dennis Hart with the local news from the Ames Daily Tribune.
Thanks very much. It's always good to be here on Fridays. As we usually do, let's start with what made news in Ames last Saturday. And one of the big stories was the visit of Democratic presidential hopeful Kirsten Gillibrand to Ames. She said the United States is in a place where President Trump has spread a darkness and a worry and anxiety that's real. She said the president is dividing the country on every socioeconomic line, every religious line, every racial line. She also talked about the Mueller report and said she favored a subpoena for a full, unredacted version. And as part of her visit, Gillibrand took part in an arm wrestling contest with a Des Moines area community college student. Also Saturday, a disturbing story about an Ames man who authorities said stabbed a German Shepherd puppy and dumped it into a trash bin. 20-year-old Rashidi Deeply Simba was arrested days after a homeless person found the puppy and called 911. The puppy received care at the Iowa State University College of Veterinary Medicine. He was renamed Moose because animal control officials said they wanted him to have a new identity and a new life, and somewhere he will never get hurt again. Authorities said Simba admitted he stabbed the animal because it had created a mess in his apartment. There was more last Saturday, including word that the League of Women Voters for Ames and Story County was keeping close watch on bills making their way through the state legislature that could change the voting process for Iowans. One would close the polls for statewide elections at 8 p.m. instead of 9, let auditors use signature verification to confirm the authenticity of absentee ballots, and prohibit the mailing out of sample ballots. The League of Women Voters wants to make sure bills do not lead to voter suppression. One more note from Saturday, a report on the Ames Seed Capital Fund, which was created in 1987 by a group of Ames businessmen to create jobs and ensure the livelihood of the community. It is an investment fund with contributions from private entities and individuals designed to provide financing for business startups and expansions. Sunday brought word that electric cars, pedal-powered computers, mascots, and more were all on display at the annual Ames Eco Fair last Saturday. Residents, students, and tourists walked through about 40 showcase booths, displays, and vendors featuring energy-saving products in the community center gym on Clark Avenue. Various city departments held informational booths about projects such as the Healthy Life Center, bicycle safety, sustainable practices, and programs such as SunSmart Ames, which is a community solar project. Also Sunday, a report that a team of astronomers from South Korea and from Iowa State University had captured the first high-resolution photo of a massive star-forming region in the Milky Way. They used a new radio telescope at an astronomy observatory in South Korea to take the photo. With the use of new technology, the team wants to take its new findings in high-resolution formats and use them to compare images from busy star-forming regions to ones that are quieter. There was more last Sunday, including part two of a report on the Ames Seed Capital Fund, which has invested nearly $4 million in 39 companies since it was established in 1987. And there was a preview story about Ames bartenders who were going to mix it up in a cocktail competition yesterday, Thursday. London Underground and Arcadia Cafe are two of the 9 restaurants and bars competing in this year's Iowa Restaurant Association State Mixologist Championships in West Des Moines. Their task? To create 3 cocktails for a panel of judges, drinks that would be judged on taste, appearance, overall creativity, and personality. Tuesday brought word that several street and waterway construction projects are underway in Ames. One project involves sanitary sewers in neighborhoods north of downtown. The $3 million project involves spot repairs, fixing manholes, and lining 26,000 feet of sewer. Work on that involved Grand Avenue from 12th Street to 18th Street this week. Meanwhile, continued improvements on South Duff Avenue, which began last summer, are nearing completion. And other ongoing projects include a shared-use path expansion from Bloomington Avenue to Ada Hayden, stormwater erosion control projects along the South Skunk River, and traffic signal replacement and pedestrian ramp improvement at 6th and the Brookridge-Hazel intersection. Also Tuesday, a report that Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Naig called the Campustown Water Quality Improvement Project a win-win-win in an Earth Day news conference at Ames Fire Station No. 2 on Welch Avenue. That project includes curb-to-curb infrastructure reconstruction on Welch Avenue, along with the installation of permeable pavers that will treat stormwater runoffs from the Campustown area upstream from College Creek and Lake Laverne. Tuesday also brought word that the Ames School Board talked about a new budget and interscholastic programs for the middle school, as well as for a restructuring of staff for next year. The staff structure would include 4 administrators, 3 counselors, and 1 behavior specialist. There is also a plan to transition intramural 7th grade volleyball and basketball programs to interscholastic programs that would allow teams to compete against other schools' teams. There was more on Tuesday, including a report that an Ames man had pleaded guilty to charges that he stole electronic devices belonging to the Ames School District. 50-year-old David Joseph Lunneberg was given 2 years suspended sentence and 18 months probation. At the same time, charges that he had harassed Ames School Principal Spence Evans were dismissed. Authorities said Lunneberg had posted messages on Twitter mocking Evans and sent emails from an account created to hide his identity in which he made false accusations against Evans. And one more note from Tuesday, a report that a man who had been a student at Iowa State University had been found guilty of charges relating to a violent incident involving his efforts to get someone else to give up an internet domain name. A jury found Rossi Larothio Adams guilty, and he faces up to 20 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. On Wednesday came word that construction at Iowa State University had closed some roads and forced SciRide to temporarily detour some routes. Sections of Union Drive, Bissell Road, and Welch are affected. 10 routes for SciRide have been temporarily changed, and bus stops at Howe Hall, Sweeney Hall, Byer Hall, State Gym, Upper Fryley, and Student Services have been closed until construction is over. The project is expected to be completed by fall. Also Wednesday, word that the Ames School Board approved a new literacy program this week for kindergarten through the fifth grade. It's the Lucy Calkins Units of Reading program, and the goal is to increase early literacy with strong foundational skills, improve equity in reading, and create a culture of literacy. Board member Lewis Rosser asked to postpone the vote for 2 weeks to give board members more time to review the plan, and eventually he and board member Jeanette Colton voted against the new reading program, but the other five board members voted to approve it. There was more Wednesday, including a report that the Story County Board of Supervisors had unanimously approved a resolution opposing current state legislation that would cap the rate of growth on tax levies for both counties and cities at 2%. The supervisors also received an update on efforts to improve the county's emergency radio system. Construction of a new five-tower system is estimated to take 18 to 24 months. A contract for the upgrade is expected by May 1st. The upgrade will improve service reception and emergency communications. Also at the supervisors' meeting, the winner of the Story County Citizen of the Year was announced. It is Gil Peterson, who has been active in volunteering with the Nevada Community Cupboard and with various food drives and pantry restocking. The supervisors established the Citizen of the Year in 2015. One more note from Wednesday from the Court Beat. An Ames man was arrested on charges he sexually abused two women on the same night earlier this month. 33-year-old Jonah Shaitaleni Paulus was accused of third-degree sexual abuse in connection with the incidents at University Village and at Buchanan Hall near the Iowa State University campus. Thursday, yesterday, brought word that the nearly $49 million Healthy Life Center project in Ames will require voters to approve the biggest bond issue in the history of the city. That bond measure will total more than $28 million, and plans are to have it on the ballot for voters to approve or not on August 6th. For Ames taxpayers, approving the bond measure would mean a tax increase of nearly 8% per $100,000 assessed valuation. But City Manager Steve Shanker said that is based on certain current assumptions and may not be the same a year from now. The public can comment on the Healthy Life Center project during the council's May 14th meeting. Also yesterday, a report that Boone High School senior Rory Alexander was hoping to be released from Blank Children's Hospital this weekend. The 17-year-old fell nearly 30 feet from a railroad bridge in Logansport back on April 15th. Since then, she has undergone two surgeries on her right leg, along with treatment for a long list of other injuries. Boone County Sheriff's officials said she fell off the bridge after leaning back to rest on a wooden support that was missing. Yesterday also brought word about the annual Reggie's Sleepout, which begins tonight, Friday, in Ames to raise money for and awareness of youth homelessness in Iowa. This year's event will be in the field of the Cyclone Sports Complex near the towers starting at 5 o'clock. That's when participants will start setting up their cardboard boxes and tents for the evening. This is the third year Reggie's Sleepout will be held in Ames. The event began in Des Moines a decade ago in response to the death of Reggie Kelsey, who was found dead in the Des Moines River. And one more note before I go, Iowa State University students are exploring what it means to be an Iowan, and for those who live in Ames, how did they get here? In a performance opening tonight, Friday, at Fisher Theater in Ames. Performance times this weekend will be 7:30 tonight and tomorrow, and 1 o'clock this Sunday afternoon. Three more performances will be held next weekend. The hope is that the stories that will be told on stage will help everyone think about their roles in the community. And there you have it. Your summary of the past week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, happy to have been here as always, and planning to take the weekend off before I make a return visit to this very seat on Monday with a look at what made news around the state. In the meantime, have a safe, healthy, and happy weekend.
With me, oh, tiptoe from the garden, from the garden of the willow tree, and tiptoe through the tulips with me. Through the tulips with me.
Tiptoe Through the Tulips, Tiny Tim, and that song goes out dedicated to Ryman Gardens. This is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. I am really pleased to have, kind of in honor of that month, talk about a very interesting angle on many different ways that sexual assault is being approached and needs to be approached. Gladie McCollum is here with me. Gladie, I met you first through Access.
Yeah.
And then spoke with you recently again and found out about some interesting work you're doing. You are writing a curriculum for cosmetology schools.
Yes, very exciting.
And this curriculum is on how to approach domestic violence and how to be prepared to talk about it with clients when they're sitting in the hairdresser or cosmetology chair. Kind of a nuanced but interesting way to realize how pervasive and how far-reaching sexual assault is in our culture. So thank you for coming in and talking about the work you're doing.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here, and it's been great to connect.
So, okay, let's get right into it.
Yeah.
Curriculum for Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Counseling for Hairdressers
mm-hmm.
and Cosmetologists. Explain.
Yeah.
Explain what this means.
So Aaron Classes LLC reached out to me in the state of Illinois in 2017. They actually passed a law where all cosmetology professionals have to have an hour of domestic violence and sexual assault awareness training in order to maintain their license in the state. So they got together with me, asking me to build this curriculum. It is an awareness education course. It will be provided to professionals online, which is super exciting. So I'm really – it's been amazing. It'll launch in mid-May. It'll go up for accreditation in mid-May. But it'll talk about just the basics to understanding domestic violence and sexual assault, what to do when a client discloses to the professional, whether they're in the cosmetology chair or they're at the nail salon or anything related to cosmetology and care for the body in that way. And then it'll also include a toolkit, so resources that are Illinois-based and direct responses that professionals can give to their clients to offer that immediate support.
What kind of tools?
So I will be including in the curriculum that I'm writing, I don't know if every curriculum includes this, a list of every domestic violence and sexual assault agency in the state of Illinois, because it is an online education course, so anyone in the state could be taking it anywhere. And I'll also be including some national hotline information, some direct responses that they can immediately give to someone when they disclose, as well as just some tips in how to help them get to the next resource or how to potentially help a survivor escape a dangerous situation if that is what they're presenting.
Mm-hmm. So you said this is a requirement now in the state of Illinois.
Yes, yes.
Why is this important?
It is very important because, I mean, for one, I know that when I go to get my hair done or my nails done, in the rare times that I do that, I tell my hairdresser everything. She knows everything. The nail technician knows everything. So I think that a lot of times our cosmetology professionals end up being second counselors in a way, kind of like your bartender is your second counselor. So it's important because a lot of times they are told things very, very personal. Things about their clients' lives and the struggles that they're dealing with, and then being able to support them. And professionals have said they feel ill-equipped. They don't know what to do because that's not what they were trained to do.
Mm-hmm.
So give us
a sense of what kind of things are you telling them in terms of what to do in this curriculum?
Yeah, so there are several main things. One is I introduced the BASER model, which is also something that Assault Care Center Access here in town teaches. And BASER stands for Believe, Affirm, Support, Empower, and Refer. So those are the five main things that anyone can do if someone discloses violence to them. So first of all, believing them, affirming their experience, supporting them, thanking them for sharing with them, empowering them to get the support that they do need, or empowering them to leave if that's potentially what they're wanting to do, or just empowering them to help them make the right decision for themselves, and then referring them to resources or people that can help them through the next stage.
And that's the toolkit.
That is part of the toolkit. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And then the second thing that I think is in there that's really important is I provide scenarios. So what that might look like when someone discloses, and how they can support them. Like I've heard stories from survivors where they worked with their hairdresser and their hairdresser charged them twice of what the service was, and then kept that second charge in an envelope for them so that that person had cash, so that when they were ready to leave their abusive partner, they were able to have money that they had saved away that their hairdresser had helped them with. Yeah, so there are really creative solutions in there, too, as ways that you can support anyone.
Wow, so the hairdresser is a potential first point of contact for somebody.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're more likely to tell, a friend or family member what's going on, and a hairdresser feels so familiar, a cosmetology professional feels so familiar because they're providing care for you, right? They're taking care of your hair, taking care of your nails. That's self-care. So it's can feel like a very loving action.
Yeah, my hairdresser said it's partly the act of touching the person that triggers that kind of intimacy. Openness on the part of the client.
Absolutely.
How did you end up doing this? It's an interesting place to end up.
Yeah, it really is. So in January, I moved into being completely freelance. Prior to that, I was working with survivors of violence with Access, and I've been working in the human services industry, trauma industry, for about 8 years. And I knew that I wanted to do more. So I moved into coaching, and I do freelance writing, and then I coach professionals in high trauma and high burnout industries. And since I have this background experience, I've written curriculum before. So this is just that next step of doing it out there on my own and still being a part of the movement, even from the sidelines.
You're a writer.
Yes. Yeah.
And you describe yourself as having a passion for human rights.
I do, yes.
Explain what that means in your own mind.
Yeah, I've always had a passion for human rights and advocacy. I know that when people ask me, what does it mean to be an advocate for others, I just say that it means protecting their story and then providing a pathway for them to be able to share their story with others. So I really strongly believe in continuing to lay bricks and a foundation for others so that they have a platform to stand on that I have had such the privilege of a platform to stand on in my life. And I know that there are people in history who built that stage for which I can stand. So I feel it's important in order to just expand that space so that others can do the same thing.
Well, it sounds like you're really expanding it into very nuanced areas.
Yes.
And kind of on the, the ideas are big, but the actual carrying out the ideas is very specific and very grassroots in a way, where it really reaches real people where they really live. So that's really part of this. Do you think that a curriculum like this will be adopted by other states as well? Is it your sense that
I hope so. It seems like it's becoming more of a movement. I know that the local academy here is already working with Access to have more of that training. Access does go in and talk to their students about domestic violence and sexual assault awareness. So I think more and more schools and more states are going to start to see this transform.
Are you interested in continuing to write curriculum for other scenarios?
Oh, absolutely.
What's next for you?
Absolutely. I would love that.
What would you do next?
What would I do next? Oh my goodness, I don't even know. Can I just infiltrate every industry so that everyone's informed? That would probably be the best.
Well, we're speaking with Gladie McCollum, and Gladie, you're an Ames native.
I am, yeah.
You went to Iowa State.
I did.
And then you went to Purdue and got your master's in psychology.
Yeah, master's in psych from Purdue University Global.
Yeah. And Gladie is writing a curriculum with our engineer is writing military. She wants
the
curriculum
next.
For the military. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be amazing. They do have curriculum. My husband is actually military, 10-year veteran.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, so we're speaking with Gladie McCollum. And thank you for coming in, Gladie, and kind of topping off Sexual Assault Awareness Month here at KHOI with us. Gladie has written a curriculum for cosmetology school, an online cosmetology school, because the state of Illinois has made it a requirement that they have training in counseling for sexual assault and violence. And last words, Gladie?
Oh, I would say anybody can be an advocate and anybody can support. All you have to do is believe.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in. And speaking of believing, please support Community Radio. We need your support. This is the month when we come to you and ask you to donate to KHOI, become a member. Basic membership is $55, and the easiest way to do it is to go online at khoifm.org, khoifm.org. And use our safe and secure donate button. If you do want to call us, there's plenty of people in the station right now who will pick up the phone. And the number is 515-292-2878 if you just want to call and make a pledge. We're going to play a medley right now of various voices that have come on local talk just to kind of drive home the awareness of how much of the community comes to KHOI and how honored we are, quite frankly, to have so many people like Gladie and many other people come and really tell their story. So we're going to play a brief medley of different voices have been on KHOI, and we really hope that it inspires you to become a member by going to khoifm.org.
My name is Haley Hager. I'm the state youth director here in Iowa for Next Gen America. We're raising awareness and doing one big final push to go out and exercise their right to vote. We had 59 staff members on the ground having face-to-face conversations with students every single day, giving them information about what to bring, like what days they can go vote. That way they are as informed as possible. And we are really, really excited about this year's elections because there's a lot at stake. And we know that young people are the biggest voting bloc here in Iowa, and we are going to have a huge impact on the outcomes this year.
My name is Clayton Stevens, and I'm a professional bull rider. I had just come from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and next week we'll be in Austin and Amarillo, Texas. If I do come home with a title in my hand, it'll be a new buckle and 10 grand in my pocket. Basically, that's how my income comes in every week, is me riding and earning money basically that way. It's pretty fun. Just that 8-second thrill ride. I mean, it's basically you get on a bull and you try to hang on for the full 8 seconds, and it's you don't know what's going to happen. Even if they open the gate, you don't know what's going to happen. Basically, when I'm up on a bull, you can hear the muscles and you hear them breathing, and they kind of snort a little bit. Basically, they're raged when they come out of that gate, so they're trying to throw you off because they don't like being touched, basically. So it's hard to hang on to some of these guys. But there's some times where I've performed great, and I feel great about it.
My name is Amelia Groen. I was Dahlia's teammate for the last 2 years. In the start of the year, the semester, I was a roommate. For anyone that knew Dahlia, she would be loving all the support we have all received over the past days. She was such a raw person to be around, and that's what made her so unique. Every day, she would walk into practice with her massive infectious smile and give you a massive hug regardless of whether you wanted one or not. And that little Spanish lady sure can give a good hug. Over the past 6 months, it has been nothing short of amazing for Dahlia. Dahlia found the love of her life, Carlos, in golf, A week before leaving for Big 12s, she injured her ankle while playing ping pong and went on to be Big 12 champion. And then went on to qualify for the US Open, win the Ladies European Amateur Championships. And recently, within the last month, she made it through the first stage of qualifying school to make it onto the LPGA. And she would have done it too if she had the chance. She has so much left to give in this world, and we were all here ready, waiting and standing to see her on her journey to be the best golfer that she could be and be the best person that she could be. Thalia Barkin, Rosamina, you fly high up there, mate, and we'll be here making you proud.
My name is Andrew Watson. I am one of Celia's classmates from the civil engineering department, and I'm one of her friends. And through the last few years, I've had the pleasure of getting to know Celia through the love of her life, her boyfriend, and my best friend, Carlos. As I've been hearing people talk about Celia, the one thing they always mention is her smile. It made a lasting impression the first time I met her, and it will be how we will all remember her in the future. The civil engineering department has experienced a terrible loss. But I know when I see a helpful smile in town engineering again, I'll be reminded of Celia. She was an exceptional civil engineer, golfer, classmate, and friend, and we'll carry her legacy in our hearts in the civil engineering department. Thank you.
My name is Paul Luth, from Ames. I was born in South Sudan. Been here the majority of my life. Came here on my fourth birthday. I lived in a beautiful place called University Village in Pamlico. It was just full of graduate students who were older with a lot of families. And so it was really cool. You'd be able to just walk and see different nationalities from one door to the other, different languages, smell different foods. It was just really beautiful. Kids would leave their bikes there and you'd be able to borrow it and you wouldn't have to worry about someone taking it. It was kind of like a communal type of setting. Most of my friends were either from South America or the Middle East or Africa or Europe. Yeah, so there's a community that kind of, the friendship stays strong because we kind of shared life together when we first came in. And we had similar stories. We were immigrants coming to learn and to better our lives, but we didn't have the resources that everybody outside of our little enclave. And so it was a really special time and moment and filled with laughter and just great stories. And it was so different from the outside world because once you left Pamel Court or Hawthorne Court, the demographic would change drastically.
Early on in the drafting and consideration of the Iowa Heartbeat Bill, some Iowa legislators and some federal legislators reached out to the Thomas More Society and said, hey, people are concerned that when this thing gets challenged, it's going to cost the state of Iowa a lot of money to defend it. Can you help out here? So we made a commitment to the legislators of Iowa that if this thing got passed and it got challenged, the Thomas More Society would defend the bill at no charge to the state. We will do it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court if possible. States are passing these things more and more and getting bolstered just by the presence of one another in doing so. You know, we passed this thing in Iowa the other day. South Carolina has passed a bill. Nebraska is now, leaders in Nebraska are saying, well, if Iowa has the, you know, the nerve to do it, maybe we'll do it too. Now, Iowa's got Heartbeat. This is the time to do it. This is the movement. Roe needs to be reversed.
We can assure people who support a woman's right to choose that we are standing by Iowa women. We believe it's unconstitutional and we're prepared. You know, Iowa is not alone in some of these fights at all. The wonderful thing about the ACLU and Planned Parenthood as well is that everything we do both, of course, you know, to benefit our state, but also looking at the national landscape. And so it's very strategic. One reason we're that way is because a lot of the bad bills that we're fighting are also bills that special interest groups are pushing to get into state legislatures and get passed. I mean, we're looking at going back almost a half century to a very dark era.
Do college athletes deserve a share of the NCAA's revenue? The highest paid public employee within 39 of the 50 states in America are head coaches of football and basketball programs. Yet the players that the universities and coaches cash in on don't see a dime. The lingering argument against paying college athletes is that they receive free tuition, housing, and usually a meal plan. But are all of these things really free? On average, a Division I college football player spends 43.3 hours per week on their sport. That's 3 hours over what is considered to be a full work week. All 43 of those hours aren't spent studying or furthering their education. They're spent solely on bettering themselves as athletes. With only a 1 in 50 chance of actually playing professional football, these young men should be focusing more on their classwork and less on the field. Here's some perspective. In 2014, star point guard of the Connecticut Huskies, Shabazz Napier, led the Huskies to a national championship. Napier was so good that he was selected in the first round of the NBA draft. After the championship season concluded, Napier stated, "Sometimes there's nights where I'm not able to eat, but I still gotta play up to my capabilities." As college football continues to grow in popularity, the money will continue to flow in. So how do we resolve this?
Hello, my name is Seth Moore. I'm with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. I'm an environmental specialist in the Land and Waters Bureau, and today we're just going to talk a little bit about Iowa's endangered bumblebee. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has recently listed the rusty patch bumblebee, scientific name Bombus affinis, on the endangered species list. This is kind of a citizen science project. We're asking people to get out there and in your yards, your fields, your pastures, wherever you have blooming flowers. But most of the time, bees are just trying to get their groceries. They're foraging on flowers, looking for nectar and pollen for their nests. This one is special as it has a rusty patch on the back. That's kind of the distinguishing markers of that species. And just want to get a grip of where they're at and help the populations boost back up. This bumblebee was once widespread in about 31 states. Originally, they were kind of a common bee, really. It's a larger bee. It's only found in 9 states right now. The decline started around 1990s. If you can find it, let us know.
So if you want to become a member of KHOI, you can call 515-292-2878. Or you can also go to the KHOIFM.org and you can sign up via PayPal online. And it's only $55 to join. Obviously, we would accept donations that are higher than that. I'm Carolyn Myers, and this is part of the monthly Ames Progressive Alliance segment on Local Talk. Today, we're going to be talking to Lucas Bliley. He is an Ames High School student here in Ames, and he's also an environmental activist and a great community leader. Welcome, Lucas.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Lucas, tell me more about some of your motivation and what got you into environmental activism.
It started pretty young. As a child, I spent a lot of time outside. And really, that became something that was really important to me. What cemented my interest in climate change specifically was a book called Inferno by Dan Brown. And in that book, they talk about how the world is experiencing overpopulation and how that is causing different environmental and climate destruction. And that really, to me, was the moment when I realized, like, that's not just fiction. That's what's actually happening in the real world. And we really, really, really should do something about it.
It's interesting how books can really spur you into an interesting motivation. I know that you've done a lot locally. Can you tell me more about how you've been able to motivate some students that you go to school with to also be involved with climate change and environmental activism?
Last year, a friend of mine and me started an environmental club at the high school called Cause. and it stands for Citizens Actualizing and Understanding Sustainable Environments. We kind of match the wording to the to the nice cause sound. That's why it's a little bit of a weird acronym. But essentially what it is a environmental club at the high school focused really heavily on local action. You know, climate change is this huge global issue, but looking at the community, what can we do to reduce the carbon emissions, reduce waste, reduce some of these other things? And through that club, we've gotten a good number of students involved with working on these local things.
What do you think are some of the motivations that some of the students have had to get involved? What have you? How have you been able to motivate them to join you?
For most people, it's a no-brainer. When people think climate change, and then they read about what that means for the future, it's a no-brainer to join a club like this and work on it. And so it hasn't been hard to get people involved at all. And the people who do get involved are really motivated because they know at their core that if we don't tackle climate change, it's going to be a worse future for everybody.
Have you had any kind of pushback from any of your fellow students?
No. I've never encountered a climate change denier who is my age. So
yeah.
I think overall, culturally, we're shifting to a place where we accept that, yes, this science that's been established since the late 19th century is, in fact, real.
There is so much pushback in my age group. You know, I'm 40, so I do get some pushback sometimes from people in my age group.
We're not getting pushback in the sense that people are actively trying to work against us. Mm-hmm. But there is a disconnect between our club and then everybody else in the school, what their sense of urgency is about climate change. And so any pushback we get is kind of this passive pushback where people are just not getting as engaged as they need to be.
I was curious. I read a little bit about a climate action plan petition that you brought to the city of Ames with a friend of yours who's also part of the Cause Club. And I was just curious, how did you come up with that idea to do the petition? What were some of the details in the position, in the petition that you brought this forward?
So the petition idea came from, I believe it came from when we met with the Ames Climate Action Team. So a few students from Cause went to this community organization that's committed to primarily local action as well, but it's of all community members, not just high schoolers. So we worked with them, and it came up in discussion that, hey, let's see what we can do to demand some kind of climate action plan here in the community. And then from there, it just was like, okay, we got to show that there's interest in that. And so as high school students, we thought, how many young people are interested in this? And so then we did a petition drive, and we went around with clipboards for just 5 days, and we got 613 signatures.
That's impressive to get that many so quickly. That's a lot of hard work to go and talk to people and convince them to sign the petition, et cetera. How do you think the petition was received by most people when you talked to them about it?
Nobody was like, I'm not going to sign that. I don't believe in that. Out of 613 people, nobody said, I'm not going to sign it because I don't believe in it. There were a few people who said, I don't understand it well enough to sign it. And then there were people who were really excited about signing it. And then there were also the people who were just like, okay, I'm going to sign it. So it was a lot of different reactions, but overall positive. And I think a lot of, like I said earlier, a lot of young people are on the same page about this.
So when you actually brought it to the city council, how do you think that was received when you brought the petition to them?
I think it was received well. I think they like to hear from young people. And so we actually got a number of responses via email about the petition and pointed to some of the sustainable things that the city has already done. And generally thanking us for our work and our effort. In terms of concrete policy, I guess, that came out of it, we did see, and I'm not saying that we did the petition, this caused it. There's been a push in the community for a long time to do more about climate change, but the city actually approved a greenhouse gas inventory for the whole city. And really, that's the first step for doing a climate action plan, because you've got to assess what the extent of the problem is, and then identify key areas and then work on those key areas to reduce emissions. Personally, I think that the city should do the greenhouse inventory, but also work to reduce emissions simultaneously, because we know we might not have a specific number, but we know there's certain parts of the community that produce a lot of emissions. And there are some things that are being done, the SunSmart program and other things to encourage rebates and that sort of thing to encourage smart energy.
Some people who are, you know, under 18 don't necessarily approach politicians locally or nationally because they feel like, well, I'm not eligible to vote yet, so maybe they won't really listen to what I have to say. But your viewpoint is just as important as anybody else's. I know that also you recently were involved in a protest slash walkout, and I think this was more of a – was this a nationwide or was this more locally, this silent walkout?
This took place on March 13th, the walkout for the high school. It was part of an international walkout that happened on March 15th. We didn't have school on March 15th. Mm. We bumped it back to March 13th. The international movement was started by Greta Thunberg, who is a 16-year-old now, climate activist from Europe, I think Sweden. And basically what she did every Friday was she went and sat at on the steps of the Parliament building instead of going to school and said, if we're not going to do something about climate change, why am I going to go learn for a future I don't have? And so all over the world, people walked out kind of in this model. And we did the same thing. We spent one period, third period, out in front of the school. There was a quick speech to kind of say why we were there. And then we just did what Greta did and stood there in silence.
So how many students participated in that, do you think?
So the Ames Tribune reported 60. I think it was a little bit more. It was a big space. And so it's kind of hard to get a sense of how many, but I would say over 100.
Did you get any sense of how many other high schools in the area probably participated in that silent walkout?
I know that a school in Ankeny did, some schools in Des Moines did, but I don't know overall how many in Iowa. Mm. But it was hundreds of thousands of students internationally. It was a big walkout.
How did the administration of the high school deal with the walkout? Were they okay? Did they knew it was happening?
They knew it was happening, and everybody who walked out got an unexcused absence.
Oh, okay. Well.
And which I think is how it should be. If we're going to if we're going to make a point or stand up for something we believe, the whole point of civil disobedience is that there's a consequence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's been walkouts in the past where, oh, parents could call in their kid to be excused. And I think that kind of defeats the purpose. I think about how it was 100 students who happily accepted that consequence to show that they thought more should be done about climate change.
Yes, that's also great that the students have made those decisions. I know that you're also a member of the Ames Climate Action Team.
Yes.
Tell me more about how you got involved with this group.
Last year, Irv Kloss, who is a longtime activist in Ames, and usually he works regarding sustainability, the environment, climate change now is his big push. He came to speak to our group cause, and through that, we ended up getting involved with the Ames Climate Action Team. And it's been a really valuable way for high school students to connect with the broader community to figure out what's going on. We wouldn't have known about the right ways to push the local government if we had not talked to people who had been working. Some of them are actually like retired city council members. Some of them have just gone to every single city council meeting going back 20 years. And so we were able to use their knowledge to help shape our push to be as effective as it could be.
In the Ames the Climate Action Team, what are some of the goals of the group? What are some of the things that they've done throughout the city to make things more sustainable?
I mean, the overarching goal is to see Ames reduce its emissions by 100%. Mm. And we haven't set, I don't think we set a date by when we'd like to see that happen, but it's between 2030 and 2050. And so our big push is centered around how can we emit less and then sequester what we can't reduce in terms of emissions. And that's kind of the goal that we center our work on. But we've done all sorts of things. Like we were at the Eco Fair.
Mm-hmm.
They did their own community forum of the petition and presented that to the city council. Members of the group have spoke numerous times in the last 6 months. I mean, like seven times maybe, like in the last 6 to 8 months, they've been at city council asking, what are you guys doing about climate change? And they're looking really carefully at the new Ames Comprehensive Plan, where Ames is deciding what our future development will look like in the next 20 years. Mm-hmm. And we're really pushing to make climate change a part of that plan. We're going to see climate change and the effect of climate change in the next 20 years. What are we doing to be resilient in Ames? Because we're going to see increased rainfall and increased flooding. And how are we designing our city to
–
I mean, we have to take that into account when we have to call it climate change. If we don't, that's a bad plan. That's a plan that doesn't consider all the factors, and it's not a plan that's good for Ames.
I'm so, you know, encouraged to see that you are a young person here in town who is willing to do so much for our community and do so much activism. So I'm really encouraged by that. And I
thank you.
Yeah, I think that's great. Right now at KHOI, there is a pledge drive happening. And so currently they've got about 27,000 out of 50,000 for their goal for the spring. We at Ames Progressive Alliance encourage you to become members of the KHOI team, and we encourage you to become a member because they will continue to help with our community goals. You can become a member for only $55. So if you want to become a member of KHOI, you can call 515-292-2878. Or you can also go to the KHOIFM.org and you can sign up via PayPal online. And it's only $55 to join. Obviously, we would accept donations that are higher than that. And we encourage you to keep up with all the Ames Progressive Alliance online as well as on Facebook. Please continue to donate to community radio.
Thank you to Ames Progressive Alliance. And you have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. on Fridays here at 89.1. And also remember that you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Also remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Shelley. And we also heard Tiny Tim singing Tiptoe Through the Tulips. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. We can always use new reporters, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. It's really fun and fascinating work to do. Please come and join the Local Talk team. And remember, as always, that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. And we're going to give the Pileated Woodpecker the final word as we go out with the sound of him hammering on a hollow log. If you're a Pileated Woodpecker, this is a radio station. Don't come here. But if you are a potential donor to KHOI, please come to the station, 410 Douglas Avenue in Ames. Make your donation. Become a member today. $55 is basic membership. Come on down. And you won't see a pileated woodpecker, but you will be able to hear our little house finches who are getting ready to hatch their eggs. And the singing around here is beautiful. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.